of that really is in our control. We can stop this imagining, fruitless imagining, and look to the kind of dreaming that we're celebrating today. Imagining a beloved community. Imagining the dream of Martin Luther King Jr. that we could co-create this place where all are welcome, where we're not focusing on abuses of power, rhetoric and chaos of our day, but on a curiosity of how we might carry our his legacy forward and our legacy. We've gathered here today in the web of life, the interdependent web of life, this community that we celebrate. So I'm inviting us to imagine how we might co-create the beloved community here in our own lives, in our families, our various communities, all the points of contact that we have, where love and justice flow together to bring about peace, tall order. But when we focus on what we can do here and now, it might come more naturally than we think. For King, he embodied this dream, not perfectly. We know stories about King and his humanity, which we share, but to the best of his ability. And that's really all we're asked, to do this to our best ability. He worked to organize people. He was charismatic. He could speak. He could speak to anyone. And we heard in the readings today, he went to India. He studied Gandhi. He listened. He became curious. His dream began to reach beyond his own needs and own wants, beyond his own southern community, beyond the United States, and he imagined a global society where everyone has a share of the earth's wealth, where poverty, hunger, and hatred are no longer tolerated anywhere, where people in black and brown skin have the same opportunities as anyone else, where everyone sees themselves as part of the human family. International disputes are settled peacefully through negotiations. And love and trust trump fear and hate. King urged officials to create systems that could implement these practices, teach peacemaking skills, strengthen infrastructures and municipalities, and ensure health care and education are basic human rights. If you're like me looking back, we've seen some of this progress. We've seen a lot of this progress. And we celebrate it because it's been hard won. So these small celebrations are steps toward a bigger, brighter future, but they're also worth celebrating here and now today. One of my favorite quotes of his, and I've been on the King Center website, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," and that whatever affects one person directly affects all of us. There's the web. We are interconnected in a web of life. If one part is disturbed, we all feel it. We can't escape it. We shouldn't want to escape it because it stirs up our empathy and it stirs up our care for people in our lives. Now, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. I know many of you grew up in places other than the Unitarian Universalist, perhaps. One of the songs that has stayed with me is "Let There Be Peace on Earth, and Let It Begin with Me." I think this beloved community is the same kind of thing. We're beginning with ourselves. King's imagination, King's dream, is something that we can join in this time of uncertainty. So focusing on a positive way forward instead of imagining worst-case scenarios. That's number one. And take action when we see something, say something. You know, the famous airport experience. If you see something, say something. And this takes courage. So when we see an injustice, when we see an abuse, when we see a racist experience, when we incur ourselves some sort of prejudice, King called these evils. They undermine society. They do violence to our society. So when we practice the way of nonviolence, we say something, and it takes courage. So we're called to be courageous people. So we resist the powers of violence by saying something. And it sounds simple. I love that we heard simple gifts today. What is simple is not really always easy, and maybe sometimes ever easy. Have you ever tried to draw a perfect circle? Sounds simple, but no. The artist among us know this. It's not that easy. But it takes courage. It takes courage to resist violence and say something. In saying something, it might feel like more violence on top of violence. We're going to offend someone, yes. But we're calling out justice. And justice simply is love in action. So are we a loving community? Do we want to create that? Yes, I bet every person here would. It's not for the faint of heart, though. Also, nonviolence seeks friendship in the face of adversaries and understanding. So how can we make friends of our adversaries? One of my favorite quotes from an ancient Greek philosopher, and I always get it wrong, so I'm not going to even try. From a true adversary, boundless courage flows to me. So in the face of adversity or an adversary, someone who's taken an adversarial stance, it takes courage to seek friendship with this person. It takes a growth mentality. I want to learn, how did you come to believe this? How did you come to feel this way? And in one of the trauma-informed care books that I'm very fond of, it takes courage and an open growth mentality to ask, what happened in your life that created this belief? I want to hear the story. I think people of faith who know we're interconnected in this web are people of the story. Tell me how you came to be this way. And in that way, we seek friendship with the adversary and we can learn and grow. And we're defeating injustice, not defeating the person. It's the person that matters in the beloved community. We also, in a nonviolent stance, that we know that unearned voluntary suffering for a just cause can educate and transform people and societies. So nonviolence is a willingness to accept suffering without retaliation and insult, without giving it back. And that insult can be violent, can be physically violent and otherwise, and we know that, but to not strike back. And this is where I think our culture holds together two really different energies in Martin Luther King Jr.'s nonviolent way and Malcolm X's violent way, more aggressive, confrontive. I don't make a judgment on it, but I know that our culture and our history has held both of those as beneficial to recognize that Black Lives Matter, that inclusive, diverse communities are stronger together when we can come together in the cause of justice, we grow and we become we become the beloved community that King speaks of. Sometimes nonviolence is a willingness to accept violence if it's necessary, but never inflict it for King. Also, nonviolence chooses love instead of hate. So resisting the spirit of hate, seeing the person is worthy of love. And love is spontaneous, unselfish, and creative. This is a high, tall order. But so how do we do it in our lives? When we see something, say something. And in my workplace, we practice anti-racism. And that means calling out racism, saying what it is, counteracting the racist comment or practice, speaking up. So as we think about the beloved community, dream together. Imagine the way forward for yourself. When we come together, we imagine it in our community. And we focus on the ways that we can create a global, nonviolent, beloved community. Elected officials, supporting policies that do that. Practicing peace through courageous curiosity. Make friends with the person in front of us, even when we disagree. And advocate for human rights. These are all pillars of the UUA. These are all pillars of this church, this community, communities of faith everywhere that can come together with these things. And let us do that, because for such a time as this, this is what we can do. Amen.
I can usually count on Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, thank you. That was very timely for us in particular. Well, it's timely for everybody, but us trying to figure out what is our message that we want to get out to the Danville community to get us known and to provide a place for people to call their home for some reasons, each mm-hmm. individual. So I think we really have to, we're at a point that if we don't figure it out pretty quick, we're not going to be here. And but it's going to require us to get behind and some sort of activity that reaches out to the community and provides a service to the community.
Mm-hmm. Getting out there, and I know for me it's easy to imagine this sitting in my comfortable spots and warm places, but to really get out there is the challenge, and it's hard to do. And so what would draw you to that activity? But perhaps joining other communities that have that momentum, how do they do it?
Thanks. That segues nicely into like my comment question, and that it's one of the biggest things I've always struggled with about the UU faith is that it's so predominantly white. And considering the values that we hold dear, it doesn't seem like that should continue to be like a pervasive thing about us. So, I've always struggled with that. And, you know, I will say that I have often thought that something that maybe we ought to be doing is doing more like visits or explorations that immerse us in communities that don't look like us. Mm-hmm. For example, something that just like leapt my brain forward in understanding people was starting to attend my friend's husband was the head of Abada Dance Company, and it's all African-American kids of like all ages and into young adulthood, a dance company, and they have a couple performances every year. And attending those and being one of, you know, five white people in the audience was, it's like I got to peek inside of something that I wouldn't have ever been able to be a part of. And, but I got to because my friend invited me. But really, it's open to the public. Anybody can go. They want people there. They need your money. And so they love to have people there. And so that maybe something that we could do, like we can't change the makeup of this county, but something that we could do is immerse ourselves in other places and cultures together and process that as a group. And and maybe move things forward in that way of having those experiences.
Well, I think a lot of this is location. Danville's a pretty white community. So I think, like going back to let peace begin with me, let this be the moment now, in the work of anti-racism, and I'm speaking from my experience on my team at work. We are led by an African-American, really powerful African-American woman. And IU Health has had this is not a commercial for IU Health, but we've had this mission to make our leadership, the hospital's leadership, reflective of the community we serve. And so having this person as my director and hiring more colleagues that are diverse on our team, I've realized how pervasive white culture is everywhere. And I hadn't noticed it because it's just been the air that I breathe. And it's what I'm comfortable with. And so the work of, we're reading lots of books. My grandmother's hands right now is what we're reading. Now I left to get my hip taken care of, and so I've got to catch up on that. So I can't tell you about that book, but it's come highly recommended, and you know, getting more of a glimpse into culture. We've read Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist. We've read the book Cast. And I like reading books. I like to get my head around these things. But the real work has been the everyday challenging white culture. And I've bumped into it. I've offended my boss many times, sadly. I've learned from it. We're on a journey together. It's been excruciatingly painful and mind-blowingly open myself to look at the limits of white culture and the way it limits me and my thinking. So there's a lot of great gifts to it, but to come up against how I use privilege, and if I'm mindless about that, I don't always think I have privilege as a woman and a lesbian. So those are things that I have grown in awareness of my immense privilege, and then how do I use that for the beloved community? And it's been good to take a break from it. I've been able to reflect on things. And then reading and preparing for today, I'm starting to get my juices going and excitement about engaging the work again. But I can't say enough about do the work yourself. Challenge the comfort of being white in a white community and find out, what can we learn? How can we grow? What is the power of integrating everybody's strengths and skills and caring for one another when people are hurt And especially when I inadvertently hurt others. It's humbling work. It's hard to face it. But it does take courage, so I resonate with King on this.
I kind of wonder if, the last I looked up, it's probably a year or two ago, 18% of Hendricks County is non-white. A lot of that's in Avon. And then there's another culture that I get concerned sometimes if we have somebody who's lower class and fairly poor come to the church, because I experienced this at another youth church, that they were really not well accepted at all. And are we up to that challenge? Yeah. But maybe a way to do class and race both is to find an organization where we do class in Hendricks County, and then we're going to be dealing with both black and white and Hispanic, and so maybe we need to think about that.
I love that idea, and the book Caste speaks to that quite a bit, of how race and wealth connect.
A couple of things. There's not very many black people in Danville, but there are more and more black people, or non-white people, Latinos, in the county. So, I mean, a lot of us come from towns in Hendricks County that are not Danville. Yeah. So that's getting better. Kind of back to what Rosie said, this may sound kind of funny, but like almost like this church taking field trips, you know, and going to like Indy, and, you know, there's, I mean, surely we'd learn something, you know. We don't want to say, you know, we're here to observe you guys or whatever, but, and, what?
Just to participate.
Yeah.
Just to be part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And the last thing is about this president and his crew. The thing that really concerns me, and I like the way you referred to Heather Cox Richardson. I read her every day. I love her. And that's helpful to get perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we always had this assumption that democracy, we'd always have it. Yeah. And we've been talking about how maybe it won't last. You know, we always backslide, you know, on different issues. But I think in general, we've assumed we would always evolve, right? And now I see, we all see these huge backslides, you know, getting rid of Roe and deport. I mean, I don't know, we're gonna haul people out of their homes, Latino people out of their homes. I mean, I don't know how that's gonna work.
Go to their workplaces.
Yeah, we're gonna, yeah. Are gonna be handcuffed and taken away. So it's, yeah. It's just scary beyond belief.
Yeah, I work with a woman who's a dreamer, and she is frightened about this. Just very unsure of what would happen. And not able to talk about it a lot. So it's very isolating for a lot of people, these fears, and we know what happens when people are isolated and fearful. Our mental health and the whole community's mental health suffers. So not talking about it, but making contact and caring. And I know it sounds simple, which you were back to simple gifts, but to be kind, to smile, to be that friendly person. The other day I was waiting in the mall because I don't like shopping very much, and this beautiful trans woman was walking down the mall, and I caught myself just smiling at them, and they smiled so big back. And it was one of those, like, time stopped. That was very spiritually fulfilling. I think they felt it too. It was a nice, like, connection.
I am, as almost all of you know, I think I transitioned way back in 1992. And one of the things I learned, and I won't tell the story, but that I tell other trans women on support group lists and stuff, is that so much of passing is about being an up, happy, smiling, warm person. And if you think about when you're out and you're walking and you see somebody who just looks like so joyful and so happy, and these people are living their dream for most of their life, most of them, they need to put on that attitude of, I'm happy and I'm having a good time with this, and I'm not going to let anybody bother me. And it's very, very unlikely that anyone will challenge you in any way. And I have a rule that if I sit down to talk to someone I don't know, or just stand and talk to them, and I get to the point where I'm avoiding saying things because I'm going to give away that I'm trans, and that happens pretty quickly because I'm non-binary gender fluid. So it's time to tell them. And I've been doing that since 1992, and I've never had a problem. So
it's beautiful.
Evidence to the how it works. Anyone else? Somebody there?
Well, I wanted to thank you for especially what you said about courage. I've been trying to, not related to anything, any recent or upcoming events, I've been trying to get more in touch with my community. Like, that's one of the things I'm trying to do this year. And, you know, joining a book club, going to marches, going to meetings. And it all sounds fun when I sign up for it, and I want to do it, and I have the time. But the hard part is, you know, sitting in the car in the parking lot being like, okay, pull it together, woman. You can do it. You can do it. You're going to walk in there by yourself, and you're not going to know anyone, and that's going to be okay.
Yep.
It takes a lot of courage. It's really hard. I just wanted to thank you for what you had to say about courage, because I'm feeling bolstered to just try. I also think it takes a lot of courage to, like we were talking about, it takes a lot of courage to recognize when you're wrong and be open and accepting to that. That's hard.
Yes.
And I think that is what is often missing from white people's conversations about race. Like what I heard from your story about your boss, it's the important part is not that your boss is black. That's not the important part. The important part is that you were willing to be wrong and learning and listening. You know, like that's the key there. That's the important part. And that's what people get so, that's the hitch that people get stuck on is, learning about white privilege and then being like, oh, so I'm a bad person. You know, like that's how where so many people get stuck. And so I think it takes a lot of courage and a lot of reflection to recognize the ways in which you were wrong, you know, while still having love for yourself and your fellow person, and like just accepting that it's, you know, we're not perfect.
Exactly, and that's the growth mentality, that I can be wrong about things. I can, and this is, I don't do it perfectly, but I can accept when I'm wrong and ask more questions so I can learn. And that, especially in the areas where it blindsides me that I'm not, it comes out of nowhere that I'm wrong, and it's hard. Sometimes I don't think I'm wrong at all. And so learning to say things like, let me think about that. Thank you for pointing that out. I want to learn from that. That's not been my understanding before, so I'm going to give that some thought. I mean, the opposite of the growth mentality is a fixed mentality, where there is a right and there is a wrong. And that's something I've been learning in all my relationships, that that we have perspectives and we can both be kind of right in our perspective, But that's not the point, to be right or wrong. The point is to develop our relationship. So when I can keep that at the heart of things, it goes better. And I have more courage because I love to be in relationship. I want that. I don't want to be alone and right somewhere in a corner. That's right. And jobless, maybe.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I wanted to say that in Hendricks County and all of Indiana, boy, we've got the toughest audience.
Yeah.
And you got to consider that so we don't...
King has a lot to say about that, that the people are not in our enemies. It's that way of thinking that is the enemy of peace. He, in his religious formats, called that evil. It was one of the evils he pointed out, was instead of working for the beloved community with the person, people are working for being victorious over an enemy. And the enemy is everywhere and nowhere. So we need to have the willingness to see the person behind the trauma and what has become an evil way of thinking, because it kills society. It kills community. So caring for the person, it has to come first. So relationships. And there's a in liberation theology, one of my favorite theologians, I studied her and wrote my theory papers based on some of her work, but in the beginning, so the Genesis 1:1, in the beginning was the relation. So word takes it out of the body and into a concept. So if we can kind of reimagine that in the beginning was the relation, that the Creator wanted relationship, and that's why we are here. We're here for relationships.
Not sure what I was going to say now. It went away. Anyone else? Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I would love to join you more often.